Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the MLS Multiplex podcast with contributors from MLSMultiplex.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the MLS Multiplex podcast. Kind of as usual, Drew here with Josh and Connor. But unlike usual, we have our new friend on of the website, Dan Garza from the website MLS Multiplex is on to join us to talk all things MLS Cup playoffs, make predictions, talk awards, and just get ready for the MLS postseason. But before we get to Dan and get to hear all of his predictions, I want to check in on you guys. Josh, how was your week this week?
It's been good so far. Only a couple days have passed by since our last recording of a podcast, so I can't really say that that much has happened truthfully. Now that I really think about it, over the last couple days, nothing has really happened for me. Watched the U.S. play today, that was cool, but other than that, it was a pretty slow weekend, especially as sports go. A lot of the leagues are not really happening right now, so nothing much for me. Connor, how was your week, or your few days, your weekend, I guess?
Yeah, it's basically just been a weekend. And you say play, but it was really a practice, a glorified practice against Panama. But yeah, I'm doing decent. I got a couple little weeks that are not as packed, and then I'm going to be beaten with a hammer with the amount of work that I'm about to get from school. So trying to get that done ahead of time, but yeah, it's been decent. Dan, how are you doing? And give us a bit of a bio about who you are and who you support and all the stuff that us or the listeners would need to hear.
Yeah, hey, I'm doing pretty good. Excited about today's USA win. So the team I support is LAFC. I'm actually from Detroit, so I support Detroit City FC, but they're obviously not in MLS. So I adopted LAFC as my team. That's the main team I focus on. I also like covering Philadelphia Union. They're kind of like my Eastern Conference club. So, yep, okay, that's what I cover.
So, what are your thoughts on the throwback Red Wings jersey that was announced today?
I thought it was one of the worst ones. Like, I just did not like it.
I had a feel.
Like the Mighty Ducks one was bad, but the Red Wings one wasn't much better. So, yeah.
As a Toronto fan, I can agree. Because ours was not any better. Canucks one, Drew, what did you think of the Canucks one, even if you saw that?
I'm not a fan of the gradient look in any team, and it's not the worst one. It's a solid middle-of-the-road jersey for the league. I've seen some worse ones. I've seen some better ones, but I'm not too crazy. I love the Canucks color scheme, like the whole green and blue I'm a big fan of. So it was pretty mediocre, retro. Is it a retro jersey? I don't even know what you call what they just released.
It had a fancy name. It was like retro something.
Retro to the future.
Reverse retro. Reverse retro was what it was called. Whatever that means. So the Colorado Avalanche are wearing Quebec Nordiques jerseys, and the Carolina Hurricanes are wearing Hartford Whalers jerseys, which for non-hockey fans, those two teams used to play in those two cities before they got moved.
Why aren't the Winnipeg Jets wearing Thrashers jerseys?
Yeah, that's my question.
And why aren't the Calgary Flames wearing Atlanta Flames jerseys? What is this?
They kind of are. If you've seen the design.
I do not like Calgary's at all. Those are weird.
I really like Calgary's.
I think I'm on an unpopular opinion of that.
It's been very, very divided, but we should not talk about hockey because that's not what people are here to listen to. And Josh just sits there blank faced as we talk about stuff
the Washington Capitals. Ilya Kovalchuk, best player of all time.
Ilya Kovalchuk, that's I'd say it's a throwback, but he's still playing.
I know, so I got to pick the Capitals.
Technically a free agent, though.
Yeah.
Technically still a free agent. But let's dive into some Americans abroad, and we'll start with the women's soccer, because there was a banger scored by Tobin Heath. That goal was just absolutely insane. In the Manchester City, Manchester United, Manchester Derby, where they drew 2-2. I didn't personally get to watch the game. I don't know if any of you did. I assume, Drew, as the resident women's soccer expert, you watched it. So what were your thoughts on how City United played? How did the North Americans do? And I noticed that you threw in the document, Rose Lavelle didn't play.
She did not. I actually did not throw that in the doc. I think yeah, Josh threw it in there. Did you get to watch any of the game, Josh? It was a pretty, it was an early riser. It was like 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah, no, I didn't catch any of it. I was just sort of following along the last like 20 minutes or so on Twitter. And so I saw a lot of people complaining about Rose Lavelle not making it onto the field. Apparently she was a healthy scratch. A lot of people seem to think that City's manager was kind of galaxy braining the situation. So that's kind of lame, because I think it would have been fun to watch her tear up Manchester United. But at least we got Tobin Heath's fantastic goal. Oh my gosh. That was so satisfying to watch. Could not stop watching it.
Yeah, that was a banger. I thought she played really well. Sam Mewis, I don't think Sam Mewis got a full 90, but I think she got subbed off toward the later part of the match. Kristen Press got subbed off before Tobin Heath's goal. But I thought they played well. I think United came back from being down 2-0, and Heath's goal kind of sparked the United's comeback. Dan, I guess another question. What, like, do you have a European team that you support?
Yeah, I'm a Bayern Munich supporter.
We got two.
Good.
Of you guys.
Another one.
Yeah.
Why are you a Bayern fan?
I don't know. I just got into them. They're one of the first teams I ever watched, so I just kind of kept following them, I guess. So nothing too like romantic about it, but yeah.
Honestly, fair. If it weren't for Davies, I wouldn't be a Bayern fan. But yeah, I think watching the North Americans, like now you have Chris Richards, who he did play today, correct?
Yeah, he came on at the end.
In the Panama match?
Yeah.
Yeah, so having somebody like that who's, what, 18, 19, playing on one of the biggest clubs in the world, who Manuel Fate, who we had on the podcast a little while ago, is saying, like, because they have Chris Richards, it might just be able to release Boateng and Alaba if they aren't able to come to agreements because he's good enough, which that would be insane, having two North Americans on the best team in Europe's backline. That'd be nuts. But let's talk about that US-Panama game. And a bit, I don't know how much you can really take away from it because Panama were not good. But what did you guys sort of think of the performances that some of the younger players like Gavioccini and Reyna and McKennie and Destin, Reggie Cannon got into the starting 11. So what did you sort of think about their performances, and how do you think this sort of shapes up for the U.S. Women's National Team going forward? Can you really take a lot out of this game in general?
I'm not taking a whole lot out of this game. Like I think you said, Connor, it kind of felt like it was just a big practice session. Although when the U.S. went down 1-0, I almost freaked out. But then I was impressed by the way they came back, and anytime you score six goals in a game, that's something to be happy about. But I think mainly for me, just the fact that these young European stars that like everyone talks so much about, right, with the exception of Pulisic and Sargent, got to be on the field together. We got to see Reyna playing with Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie, and it feels like we don't get to see that a whole lot. It feels like when you watch the U.S. men's national team, either those guys are hurt, or they're just, you know, not available for selection for whatever reason, or it's all, you know, just an MLS camp. So I'm not taking a whole lot from this individual game itself, just because I thought Panama was really bad. I thought 6-2 was a fair scoreline. But I'm just happy that we got to see them play. It feels crazy that we somehow got men's national team games in during this crazy time. So I'm not taking a whole lot away from it, just good to see these guys playing with one another. I thought Weston McKennie played really well across both games. I thought Sebastian Soto got 2 assists today. So I thought he played really well. That was kind of a nice surprise. I'm not taking a whole lot from today's game. Just really good to see these young European players that we hear so much about taking the field together for really the first time in what feels like forever. Dan, what about you? What are you taking away from the U.S.'s win versus Panama today?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me was just the battle for that number nine spot. I thought both Soto and Giacchini played really well today. But I think, you know, you still have Sargent, who wasn't with the team for these friendlies. So I think it just makes it a lot more interesting to see kind of what's going to happen, because they're all 20 right now. So they still have a long way to go in their careers. And I think you have to say Sargent's still the top option, but I still think that, you know, Soto and Giacchini maybe could displace him depending on what happens to them the next few years before the next World Cup. So that's kind of my biggest takeaway from this, is just that continued battle to find that number nine. I think after these performances, you could say that all the players that you could consider for that spot are all from Europe. I'm not sure if there's really an MLS player right now that you could consider for that role. I think, you know, Sargent, Soto, Giacchini, guys like that are going to be competing for that starting role for the big tournaments coming up.
Greg Berhalter's head just exploded without you mentioning Giassi Zardes.
I was going to say, I mean, Zardes had a really good season, but I mean, like I said, these guys are all 20 years old, and I just think Giacchini and Soto probably have bigger opportunities ahead of them. And I think they'll both be playing for teams in top divisions in Europe. So, yeah.
I would pick Zardes as my striker if the U.S. had to play a qualifying game tomorrow, by the way, over all of these players. But I think I'm a little different from you guys from how I took away from this game, because the young guys that did show up and perform, like Giacchini and Soto, I think it's really, really big that they took advantage of their opportunity, because coming into this camp, I think if you were to just talk to a casual USMNT fan, not like a civilian who only watches World Cups, but like someone who kind of follows soccer and will know most of the names on the team, you know, they'll know Pulisic and the big names. But if you were going to say to them on Wednesday before any of these games were played, oh, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing Sebastian Soto and Nicolas Giacchini playing, they probably look at you like, who are these guys? So the fact that these guys got onto the field today, scored, took advantage of their opportunities, that was exciting to me. I had a blast watching Sebastian Soto score his two goals, because this is exactly what he did for the U-20s last summer in the U-20 World Cup. So for him to just carry that over was really good, especially for a player that he's only playing in the second division in Netherlands right now, I think it is. So he's not really in like a big league. And yeah, Panama's team was pretty trash today, honestly. But that didn't feel like a practice session. At least I hope Weston McKennie isn't two-footing other players in practice sessions like he did today. There were just a few moments that were really CONCACAF-y, even for it being a lesser team. But it's good to see Soto taking advantage. Also, Richie Ledesma, he had the assist on the fourth goal, Soto's first goal. He crossed it into the box perfectly, set up Soto for the header. So that was really good, because Ledesma's not getting a ton of playing time at PSV right now. And he's, so far, in his little cameo appearances for PSV and the US, he's got 2 assists. So that's really exciting to see.
So I'm just going to be blatantly, completely honest. I hadn't heard of Giacchini or Soto or any of those guys coming into today's match. So for people like me who may not necessarily follow the US development system incredibly closely, as I follow Canada a little bit closer, where do these guys play? What do you say are the likelihoods of them actually being good players? Josh, you know prospects, so why don't you take this?
So as far as Nicolas Giacchini goes, I don't actually know too much about him. He is playing in the second division in France for, is it Kane? Kane? C-A-E-N?
Kane.
Yeah. There you go. So he's playing for them, but he's getting regular minutes, so that's good, even though it is the second division in France, which is obviously not one of the stronger leagues. Soto, he is on loan from, I might get him confused with someone else. Is his parent club Norwich City right now?
Yeah, it's Norwich.
Right,
yeah.
So he's on loan, but he's only in the second division in Netherlands. But he's been playing with the U-20s a lot. He played with them last summer, So I know him from that, and he was really good for the U-20s. I think he was the team's leading scorer last summer. So he's obviously doing pretty well. So at least those two guys. Dan, it sounds like you know a good bit about these players as well. Tell us about, you know, Ledesma. Who else made an impact today? I'm trying to think of.
Tim Weah.
Yeah, Tim Weah is another one too. Tell us about that, Dan.
Yeah, so I mean, Giacchini's, you know, like you said, playing in the second division. He started out at Cannes, where he still plays right now. It sounds like he has some interest maybe from other clubs in France. There's just been like transfer rumors at this point, nothing concrete. So he seems like a pretty promising prospect from Cannes. And yeah, I definitely think he'll be a player that moves on to a bigger opportunity, maybe at the end of the season, because I think he has like 3 goals and 7 appearances so far. So he's done really well at the start of the season. So I think he'll get noticed for that. And then Soto, I mean, he's at Norwich. He's on Telstar from Norwich, but I know. Oh man, I can't remember the club he played for before this. I think it might have been Fulham that he was on, but he never, you know, played for the senior team. So he's kind of struggled to find minutes for first teams. So he's been kind of a player that hasn't really performed at the club level as he has at the international level. But he's been doing really well so far for Telstar. I think he has 5 goals and 6 appearances. So, yeah, maybe he'll make the move to Norwich next season, and that'll kind of give us a better picture of where he's at in terms of the depth chart for the U.S. once he gets to a higher level.
I just looked at it, and he's from Hanover. That's the team he was at before. And I do remember he was trying to get that move after the U-20s, after his performance, and that's how he got to Norwich.
Yeah.
It's certainly looking like there are more and more options at striker for the U.S. program, and I wonder how much of an impact this little set of friendlies has on a potential Ayo Akinola joining the U.S. national team instead of the Canadian national team, and whether or not Soto and Giacchini and Weah and like all their performances potentially impact where he thinks he'll get the most playing time. But I'm very interested to see that.
One other thing that we have to keep in mind is because of the pandemic, a bunch of tournaments that were supposed to happen this summer are now happening next summer. So you've got the Olympic team that the U.S. has to worry about. I think the U-17s have a significant tournament next summer on top of Gold Cup and World Cup qualifying next year. So it's good that all this depth is showing up. But some of these younger guys playing in today's game, I doubt we'll see this many younger players with the senior team going forward, just because there are so many tournaments happening next summer. And it's good. These guys are going to have to get spread out amongst the teams.
Yeah, next year is going to be crazy.
Yeah, for sure. But they definitely have a multitude of options, especially when you look at some potential MLS options, which we should talk about now. Daryl DK, who was nominated for the Young Player of the Year Award. I guess we can just dive into the awards now. We can start with the Young Player of the Year Award, which was announced today. Diego Rossi won it. I say not surprising, but I definitely could have seen this going to Brandon Aaronson, and the vote was incredibly tight. I think it was only separated by like 2 decimal points, which all things considered, that's crazy. But what did you guys sort of pick for, like, who did you think was going to win Young Player of the Year? I mentioned Daryl DK. Josh, maybe you can go first because that was your pick. Why did you go with him as opposed to Diego Rossi, who scored more goals than Daryl, and Brendan Aaronson, who has secured a move away to RB Salzburg?
Couple factors. So yes, Rossi and Aaronson are the favorites, but I picked Daryl DK because he kind of came out of nowhere over the summer. I also sort of knew him from, like, Matt Doyle's been, he's been bragging about this guy since he was coming out of college before the season started. So when Orlando picked him up, I was kind of interested in what he would do. He played well, got 8 goals, 4 assists in 1,200 minutes, a little more than 1,200 minutes. So that's pretty solid. But honestly, one of the main reasons I picked DK is because this used to be the Rookie of the Year award, and it would have gone to players in their first professional season, in which case DK would have been the runaway winner. So I felt kind of bad. This is my way of assuaging my guilt. I felt kind of bad that he didn't get the chance to win the award because he got stuck with all these other fantastic young players. So they probably should have had a Young Player of the Award Young Player of the Year award by now. This is kind of an overdue change, but he kind of got shafted as a result.
Yeah, so Daryl DK, you don't get Rookie of the Year officially, but you get Rookie of the Year in Josh's book on the podcast. So good for Daryl. But I kind of chickened out. I picked Brendan Aaronson. Obviously, we know how good of a player he is. I think when I think about the pick, I feel like it had to go to Rossi, because how would you not give the Golden Boot winner Young Player of the Year award? Like, I would have given it to Aaronson, but I totally get Rossi. Even though, Josh, we've had our Diego Rossi talks on this podcast. But, yeah, I mean, Brendan Aaronson, we know how good he is. He's not the same player as Diego Rossi. He's not putting in the goals that he is, but he's so influential to the Union. And I think when you look at the Philadelphia Union's successful 2020, winning the Shield, first trophy in club history, Brendan Aaronson, at only 20 years old, is very central to that, along with a lot of other really good players, which I'm sure we'll talk about as we get more into the awards. And also, he's younger than Diego Rossi. So I gave him that edge. I think Rossi's 22, 23 or something like that. So
22.
He's 22. Okay, cool. So between Aaronson being a couple years younger and being on a Shield-winning club, that gave me the edge. But again, Rossi winning Golden Boot, how do you not give it to him? But I went with Brendan Aaronson. Dan, you've come out as an LAFC supporter, so I imagine you picked Rossi. But why? What went into you picking Diego Rossi for your Young Player of the Year winner?
Yeah, I mean, aside from getting the Golden Boot, I think without Carlos Vela in the lineup, he really stepped up and led the way offensively for the team in the MLS's back tournament. And then obviously when the regular season started, he didn't stop scoring either. So that was one of my reasons, I think, for picking him too, was just that, you know, without Vela, that really hurts them. But he came in and stepped up and really delivered consistently too. So, and aside from that, I just think he's the best under 23 player in the MLS right now. In terms of what the league has in terms of the young talent. So, you know, I definitely think, though, that this is probably his last season in MLS. I think he'll make a move somewhere in the winter.
Quick question. Do they have qualifications for what defines Young Player of the Year? Was it like you had to be under 23 or something like that?
Is defined?
Yeah. Yes.
Defined as a player. 22 and under. Born on or after January 1st, 1998.
Gotcha.
God, man. That's only 2 years older than me.
I know. We're stuck here on a Monday night recording an MLS podcast. Meanwhile, Brendan Aaronson is
stuck
going to
here.
Europe.
Stuck here. Wow. Okay. I feel appreciated. I'm sure Dan feels appreciated as well. Stuck
if Red
here.
Bull Salzburg was offering millions of dollars for me to play soccer for them in Europe, I would gladly leave the podcast, is what I'm saying, Connor. And I know we all would, but...
I was going to say,
even if Breck Shea came on?
that might
Breck Shea.
We're going to talk about Breck Shea in a second, but first I got to give my pick. I followed in Dan's footsteps and selected Diego Rossi, not Rossi, Rossi.
I've been saying Rossi, haven't I?
Yes, you have.
Yeah, that's probably the correct pronunciation since he's of Italian descent.
What?
Right? Want to be Rossi? I don't know. I don't speak Italian.
He's Uruguayan.
Yeah. Oh, so never mind. I don't want to...
What is happening?
Remember that episode on SpongeBob?
He can be of multiple nationalities and ethnicities and backgrounds. He doesn't have to be just Uruguayan. He can have Italian family. He has an Italian passport.
All right, let's move on. Okay, Josh, you're just digging yourself
a hole. He's got an Italian passport.
You're digging yourself a hole. Oh, my God.
That's why he's going to move to an Italian team. Just saying.
I went with Diego Rossi because... A, he scored a lot of goals, but I could definitely see an argument for Brendan Aaronson, and I'll tell you why. LAFC, without Carlos Vela, finished 7th, right? Diego Rossi is supposed to carry that team. Even without Carlos Vela, they should be a top 3 team in the West. Fair in saying that?
Yes, I think so. Vela's not as important as he seems. It's Atuesta.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, all right. My argument is Diego Rossi, he's supposed to carry his team. And to be completely honest, he kind of didn't. They finished in 7th in the West, almost out of the playoffs. And meanwhile, Brendan Aaronson carried his team, albeit with guys like Sergio Santos and the multitude of players that Philadelphia have, carried them to an MLS supporter shield, if we're calling it that again. I don't really know what MLS is calling it. But it's basically, my argument is, Brandon Aaronson performed better this season, and he's younger. And he's expected to do, I guess, not as well as Diego Rossi. So I could definitely see the argument for Brandon Aaronson, but I think Diego Rossi winning the Golden Boot, it was self-explanatory. As I feel like the next selection and the next award is should be, although Josh and Drew both disagree with me again, Goalkeeper of the Year, I'm talking about. And Andre Blake, the goalkeeper for Philadelphia Union, won it this season. It's the second award, Goalkeeper of the Year award, since 2016. 21 is first. But I guess I'll start with Josh. Let's start with Josh again. And we'll finish with... Actually, looking at this, I was the only one who picked the winner. Wow. Okay. Josh, why don't you go first, then maybe throw it off to Dan because he had a similar pick. But who did you pick for Goalkeeper of the Year?
I just want to point out that Diego Rossi is of Italian descent. I thought you should know that. I just confirmed it. That's what I've spent this last couple minutes doing. So I'm not wrong. Sorry, I'm still on that. I picked Eloy Room as Goalkeeper of the Year. Okay. I knew Andre Blake was going to win, I guess, is probably also why I picked Room. But Eloy Room, he had a really good season. You know, I remember he had a great Gold Cup last summer with Curaçao, and that helped him get the transfer to Columbus. I actually wasn't really expecting him to win that job when he first got there, but he promptly locked it down. We all know Columbus kind of fizzled out towards the end of last season, but he's been really important for them this season. He's easily one of their best players, up there with Nagby and Zelarayan and Zardes. So thought he was a good choice. Obviously, I think Andre Blank is the obvious choice among the finalists, but I felt like Eloy Room deserved a shout.
Yeah, I went a little different route, but when I put on the outline who I picked Matt Turner for the New England Revolution, but I think it was pretty clear cut that it was going Andre Blake. I think when you look at the voting percentage, his was like astronomically better than anyone else's voting percentages between media players, and I forgot what the other voting category was, but Andre Blake totally took it away, and I thought he deserved so. But I thought Matt Turner deserved a shout. I think he finished in second in the voting. He came out with 6 shutouts and made 68 saves. And I'm thinking about, because right, Andre Blake obviously on a super good team, really good defense in Philadelphia. And the Revolution aren't the best defense in the league. I'm looking up exactly how many goals that they let up this season right now. But even though the defense in front of him wasn't that incredible, I thought he still played really well, and it was a big part in them kind of holding on to one of these final few playoff spots. So I think Andre Blake winning it is very deserved. I thought he was the best goalkeeper of the league, but I thought Matt Turner deserved a good shout. And they only let in 25 goals this year, and I think a lot of that was because of Matt Turner. And again, Andre Blake had that really good defense in front of him, but Matt Turner kind of worked with what he had to make New England a pretty good defense. So I picked Matt Turner, but again, totally understand Andre Blake winning the award. Dan, I know you picked Eloy Room as well, along with Josh. So why did you go the same route as Josh for Goalkeeper of the Year?
Yeah, I think he was a big part of why Columbus turned it around this season. He didn't play very much last season. I think he only made 12 appearances, and then this season he made 17, so a little bit more. But he was pretty fantastic, I think, in some of the big wins for them. I know recently when they beat the Philadelphia Union, he made some really big saves in that game. I think he's third in the league in clean sheets, tied for third in clean sheets. And he was fourth in clean sheet percentage, and then second in save percentage. So he had some really good stats this season as well to back that up. But I think he's definitely entered the conversation for being one of the top goalkeepers. Even though the league didn't think he deserved it this season, he's definitely one of the top goalkeepers in the league now.
100%, and if his performance against Philadelphia doesn't show that, I don't know what does. He was spectacular in that game, but I did not go with Eloy Room. I went with the winner. I went with Andre Blake, simply because I look at the last few matches that Philadelphia had and how it was a lot tighter and they let in a few more goals, I think. It just sort of made it very clear how important Andre Blake was to that team and how crucial he was to the Philadelphia Union's success. Now, while the Revolution and Crew both had very good seasons as well, both playoff teams, Philadelphia, as I'm going to say over and over, they were just simply the best team in the league. And that is coming from a Toronto FC fan. So it's very clear that the best goalkeeper in the league plays for the best team, in my opinion, and he won that award. I think it's fair to say, and it's deserved, I'd say, based on his performance this season and how well he's played. But let's move on to the final award that has been given out or awarded already, slash a winner announced, and that is the Comeback Player of the Year, the winner being Bradley Wright Phillips, former New York Red Bull, now current LAFC player. So far, Dan's LAFC are running away with all the awards. But who did you guys pick? We're going to finish with Josh because he went a little outside the box. So why don't we start with Drew, because you also went sort of outside the box in comparison to Dan and I.
Yeah, I went with a defender, the old guys in defense. I went with Milton Valenzuela. He missed all or a lot of 2019 after, I think it was an ACL, just an injury kept him out for most of the year, and he came back this year and helped Columbus be what they are behind. I think they're the best defense in the league. They've let in 21 goals. Them and Nashville are right there for best defense in the league, and I don't think that can happen without him. He's defense wins championships, and he's built Columbus into being one of, if not the best defense in the league after missing all of 2019 or a lot of 2019. So he doesn't get a lot of headlines because the defender, he's not going to steal the show with incredible goals. But the old saying is, yeah, the best defenders don't have to defend, and he doesn't really have to do a whole lot because he just knows where to be in the right spots, and he works well with the defense. And obviously it's working out for Columbus, only letting in 21 goals this year. So I gave him a shout, giving the old defense, giving the defense some credit, so I went with Valenzuela. Connor, who did you pick for your Comeback Player of the Year?
I selected the winner, Bradley Wright Phillips. I think the story that he had getting, I believe he was cut, or just his contract wasn't renewed with a team that he'd been with for quite a few years in New York Red Bull. I think that story of what he had to go through to get a contract or a trial even at LAFC and then to become a member of them and then to what he accomplished this season, I think is incredibly deserving. And I know Dan picked the same player. So as someone who follows LAFC, maybe you can go into a bit more detail into what makes this story so special. But why did you pick Bradley Wright Phillips?
I picked him because I think when LAFC first signed him, their main objective was just to bring in someone with experience, but they weren't necessarily looking for Bradley Wright Phillips to come in and be the main starter for them up top, because they already had Adama Diomande, who had a pretty good season in 2019. So I think they're looking to rotate Wright Phillips with Diomande. Diomande obviously left this season, so Bradley Wright Phillips became the main option, but yeah, I don't think the expectation for him was ever to be one of the leaders in terms of goal scoring. I think they really were looking for him to be more of a bench player, because I did think that the front office saw him as a player who wasn't at his best anymore. But he proved everyone wrong, and I mean, he was great in the MLS's back tournament, and he picked it up in the regular season as well, scoring some more goals. So yeah, I just don't think he exceeded expectations, because I don't think anyone really thought that he was going to be able to produce at the level he once was able to, especially after last season. He only scored like 2 goals last season, and he did make over like 20 appearances. So it's not like he wasn't getting opportunities last season. So it's just a great story all around to see a player like him who's won the Golden Boot twice make a comeback and really kind of cement himself as one of the best strikers in the league again.
I just want to say before I mention my pick, I am super happy that BWP got the award. He's the first player I ever interviewed, and he was very accommodating to me. He could tell I was inexperienced when I was asking him questions. So he was great. He's such a great guy. very nice person. But I selected a gentleman not in the final three, unfortunately, although he probably should have been in the final three. I picked Breck Shea, the fan favorite of the MLS Multiplex Slack. The legend, Breck Shea. But honestly, though, objectively speaking, he had a really great season. He scored 4 goals for Inter Miami. Half of those were against former team Atlanta United, unfortunately. But that's not important. And he did so in only 628 minutes. So it's not like those 4 goals came from having played the whole season or anything. So he ended up being a pretty important part for Miami, and it obviously helped them get into the playoffs. Another thing that, you know, I realized as I was making my pick of the great Breck Shea, he hadn't scored since April 2018 up until September of this year. So really huge, because he wasn't able to contribute in that way for Atlanta. And in that last year with Vancouver, obviously, with having just scored in April, he didn't do much for the team down the stretch in terms of goal scoring. So for him to come back, and especially on a team where no one would have pegged him as an important player. I mean, this is Miami we're talking about. They've got the Matuidis and the Higuaín's and the Gonzalez Pierces of the world and the Pizarros. So for Breck Shea, of all people, to come into that team and contribute significantly, coming off of that ACL injury last season, is really huge.
Can you tell us what that first interview with Bradley Phillips was like and how you ended up in that position?
I randomly got an email from a guy who, this was part of the All-Star festivities in Atlanta in the summer of 2018. The guy just hit me up and was like, hey, we're going to have Bradley Wright Phillips and Greg Garza at this Coca-Cola-sponsored event for the All-Star. You want to do some interviews? And I was like, is this a joke? Not really. I did not say that back, but I honestly didn't believe what it was at first. But yeah, no, and I just, it just so happened that the interview happened, it was like just a few days after Bradley Wright Phillips scored his 100th career MLS goal. So I got to ask him some questions about that and his past All-Star experiences as well. So it was really cool. It was a really fun experience. And like I said, he was extremely accommodating to me.
Where can people find that interview?
It is on MLS Multiplex. I'm pretty sure you can search All-Star interview. You can probably just search Bradley Wright Phillips' name and it should come up. But yeah, it's on the website there somewhere.
All right, so go and read that and check out some great work on the MLS Multiplex website, and just shows how long Josh has been around. I don't know if you're the longest tenured member at MLS Multiplex anymore, or still.
I might be.
But yeah, he might be the old man. He's the old man here, as far as I know, as long as Dan isn't over 25?
26,
ooh,
yeah.
There we go, elder statesman.
All right, so I am a child compared to you two, but we have taken 37 minutes to get to the awards that haven't been announced yet, and we still have to go through every single playoff game, so we're going to motor through these. If there are overlaps, which I think every single one of my picks so far, every single one of my picks for the rest of this is an overlap. So I won't do any sort of explanation. I'll just let these guys sort of take it away. But we'll start off with the award that everybody cares about. I say everybody. The only award that people care about, MVP. We'll start with, three of you have the same players. Actually, four of you have the same players. Drew, you just went outside the box a little because Josh took yours. So let's start with you. And then, yeah, we can just go through it. But Drew, who did you pick, which will definitely not win the MLS MVP award?
Yeah, I was a little different from the gang. I went with Jordan Morris. I've kind of been on his bandwagon this whole season from MLS's back, because when the MLS's back best 11 came out, he was not included in it, because Diego Rossi plays that same position and he got the nod. I think he won Golden Boot at the tournament as well, in addition to the regular season. So I thought it was just really unfortunate that Jordan Morris did not get into that best 11. But yeah, an 18-game start, he's pulled up with 10 goals and 8 assists. So I mean, he's averaging a goal or an assist per start, which is pretty incredible. And he's on a good team like Seattle. Legit MLS Cup contenders, as it feels like they always are. And yeah, I feel like even though, given how good he is, he's kind of flown under the radar, because Diego Rossi plays that same position. So yeah, I think, again, like Connor said, unfortunately, I don't think he's going to win the award, given who everyone else picked, who I think is very justifiable and one of, if not the best player in the league right now. But yeah, I went with Jordan Morris. I think he's been Mr. Consistent for Seattle this year, and I think he's going to do it again in the playoffs. I guess Dan and Josh can tag team this one, but who did, I guess Josh, we'll start with you. Who did you pick for your MLS MVP award?
Yeah, I picked Alejandro Pozuelo. I don't have much to say about it. I think he was kind of just a front runner for a while, and I think you guys can probably say a couple more meaningful things to me, but to me, just felt like Pozuelo was kind of the front runner of this, although I do wish, I guess in another year, Jordan Morris might have had more of a say, although this whole year has been just insane in general. But yeah, I picked Pozuelo.
Yeah, I picked Pozuelo too, just because I think he was, I mean, he was pretty consistent this season. He had 9 goals and 10 assists. He might not be as like an attractive playing style as like a guy like Rossi, who was also a nominee. But I think too, you have to factor in that Toronto, you know, they finished in a playoff spot near the top. And, you know, for LAFC, they finished 7th. I think, Connor, you mentioned earlier about how, you know, Rossi was supposed to be the go-to guy, but LAFC still finished 7th. So I think there's something to be said about that as well. I think Morris had a good season too. It was great to see him playing for Seattle there with Madero too. They both had really good seasons, but I just think Pozuelo, he controls the game for Toronto a lot of times, and he's a really good go-to player for them. So that's why I picked him.
Yeah, and the way I look at the award, if Toronto didn't have Pozuelo, they would be nowhere near where they are now. And it's as simple as that. So to that end, I think he is the most important player to his team and the most valuable player to his team and probably the league as well, because apart from Carlos Vela, he's probably a top five talent. But let's move on to Defender of the Year, where I will continue to not talk. We'll have Josh go last to represent my pick. But let's continue the theme of going Drew first. So Drew, who did you select as your Defender of the Year?
Yeah, kind of going to Connor's logic of having really good players play for really good teams. As far as Defender of the Year goes, I'm going with a defender that is on the best defense in the league, or one of the best defenses in the league. I know when we talk about other picks, we're kind of in the same boat here, that we're all picking defenders from really good teams. But I went with Jonathan Mensah. Columbus Crew defender. Again, they've only let in 21 goals, best in the league. And I think he's played every minute so far this year. He started 23 games and played 2,070 minutes, which I'm not a math guy, so I don't know if that's 23 times 90. I'm going to assume that equals 2,070. But yeah, he's been Mr. Consistent. He's been there. Josh is like tilting his head. I think he's trying to figure it out in his head. It's pretty impressive. If you get it while I finish talking.
How many minutes did you say?
2,070 across 23 games.
2,070. 23 times 90.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So he's been on the field all the time for Columbus, and again, really good team, best defense in the league. So, yeah, I think he deserves a shout. And if he wins or not, I don't know. I think we have a really good other contender here as we keep talking. But, yeah, I went with Jonathan Mensah for my Defender of the Year. Josh, who did you pick for – well, no, we'll start with Dan because you, Josh and Connor are the same one. So, Dan, who did you pick for Defender of the Year?
Yeah, I went with Mark McKenzie from Philadelphia. I thought he did really well. This is probably his best season in MLS so far. I think he was definitely the guy who anchored the back line for him this season. Sounds like he might be on the move to Europe too. So he's definitely one of the promising up-and-coming players in MLS and also for the U.S. Men's National Team. So, yeah, I just thought he had a good season. Nothing more than that.
Just to kind of piggyback off that for Mark McKenzie, you know, I remember last, I guess it was like June, he was really dealing with injuries to start the MLS season, and so he lost his starting spot with the Union. It was Austin Trusty and I want to say Jack Elliott, and they went off to the U20 World Cup, and McKenzie was still pretty much injured, but Todd Ramos went ahead and named him captain anyway and gave him a couple chances in the tournament. McKenzie did not look good in that tournament. So since then, he has clearly battled back. He's improved. He's learned from his experiences, and he's just grown into a great young player. So my hat is off to him for getting over that adversity of those injuries and losing his starting spot, and to now he's in the running for Defender of the Year, and like Dan said, it looks like he's going to get a move to Europe. So props to him. Super impressive. Makes me feel really good about having him with the U.S. going forward. But my pick, I went with Walker Zimmerman. You know, everyone sort of looked down on Nashville when they coughed up all that cash for Walker Zimmerman, sent it to LAFC. Now, that trade does look a little one-sided, but not in the direction everybody thought. I think people are questioning why LAFC gave him up in the first place, because their defense definitely took a bit of a hit. On the other side of things, Nashville, they looked great defensively, and it's clear that Zimmerman is a leader of the team, if not the leader of the team, along with probably Dax McCarty. So, just super impressed by what he's been able to do with that expansion side, and to help lead them into one of the best defenses in the league. I want to say Columbus probably let in fewer goals, so props to Nashville for picking up Zimmerman, and good on Walker Zimmerman, man. I wasn't very high on him, but he's clearly proven that he's a very good defender in this league.
Fully agree. Now let's move on to the Newcomer of the Year award. Dan, you will go last because you chose my player as well. Let's start with, you know what, we'll just start with Drew from now on because he's just unique for every single pick.
Yeah, happy to start. I went with Alan Pulido, which we haven't really talked about at all on this podcast because we've talked more about how we don't talk about Sporting Kansas City. But he's missed a lot this year. He's only started 11 games. He's played in 12. But in those 11 games that he started, he's got 6 goals and 5 assists. So he's again on that same pace as Jordan Morris is, averaging a goal or an assist per game. And even though we don't talk a lot about Sporting Kansas City, they're top of the West, right? And I think he's a big part of that. The time that he was on the field, while it was limited, he made sure that it was very productive, especially given how close that top spot in the West came to be. I mean, the only reason Sporting Kansas City has it is because they have one more win than Seattle. They're tied on points, and Seattle even has a better goal differential. But they have 12 wins compared to Seattle's 11, so Sporting gets the number one seed. So I thought we didn't talk a lot about him, but when he was on the field, he was productive, and he made it the Sporting better. And I think see where it goes from here, see if he can keep it going in the playoffs. But I thought he had a really awesome season, given how much he missed. Josh, you're up next. So who did you pick for your Newcomer of the Year?
I went with Lucas El Rayon from Columbus Crew. He played in 16 games, started 12. He was dealing with a bit of injuries and only played about 1,000 minutes. And he still got 6 goals and 4 assists in this 1,000 minutes, not 10,000 minutes. Columbus, again, they're just one of the better teams in the league. You know, obviously there are, you know, about the same 5 or 6 teams we keep mentioning the players from because those are the best teams in the league, and Columbus is one of those, and Zeller Ryan definitely played a big factor. You know, it's unfortunate that he was dealing with some of those injuries. You know, I think everybody would have wanted to see a little bit more of him this season, and so hopefully he can put together a full, healthy season next year. But I'm looking forward to seeing him in the playoffs and seeing what he can do. He is such an integral part of the Crew, really the creative force behind their attack, and he really proved it this year. So he was my pick. I thought that he was slightly more deserving than the other two finalists, and who knows, maybe he'll get the award. This is one of those that needs to be announced, but it leads me to the other finalist in this that Dan picked. Tell us about your choice, Dan.
Yeah, I went with Robert Berich from the Chicago Fire. Even though Chicago didn't make the playoffs, I still think that Robert Berich was the guy who kept them basically relevant in the playoff discussion. Without him, I don't think they would have even come close to qualifying for the playoffs. Obviously, they didn't, but yeah, I just think without him, they would have been worse off than they already were this season. And he scored 12 goals this season, which is pretty impressive for a guy in his first season in the league. So that's why I picked him.
Wow, I did not realize he scored that many goals. Like, I knew he'd scored a few goals this year, but I didn't realize he'd scored 12. That's seriously impressive.
Yeah, he snuck up the Golden Boot standings there the last few weeks because he wasn't scoring that many at the start of the season, but he scored, I think, 4 goals in his last 5 appearances. So
nice. That's good.
He picked
form.
Up the pace.
That's good
form. Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder how much recency bias is going to come into play with this award because El Rayon had a very good start at MLS's back, if you can remember the free kick, but it'll be interesting to see. I could see this award going any two ways because I don't think Pulido played enough to get it. But let's finish off our awards before we jump into the playoffs with the Coach of the Year, where we have Drew and everybody else. Drew, we'll start off with you because you're unique, as usual. Who did you select who will definitely not win the award, but honestly probably could?
He totally could, and because when we've been talking about this podcast, there's been a handful of teams that we've talked about, right? We've talked a lot about Columbus Crew players. We've talked about a lot about Philadelphia Union players. We've mentioned one Orlando City player, and he's a rookie, and Josh mentioned him, Daryl DK. And despite not all of that Orlando City attention, they're one of the best teams in the East, and I think you can't look at that and not give credit to Oscar Pareja for what he's done in Orlando. This is a team that had not made the playoffs, and now they're looking, where are they, the four seed, a pretty bad end to the season, but still that can't overshadow. Took them to MLS's back final. They lost to Portland, but this is a team that had not made the playoffs. Took them to the final in this crazy year. And again, Daryl DK, Nani, are these big, Thomas Mueller, but like, these aren't big name players that you expect to show up. And again, we haven't talked a whole lot about these players in awards, but despite that, he's made them what they are. And whether they'll win MLS Cup, we'll find out when we talk about predictions. But Orlando City, one of the best teams in the league, one of the best in the East. And I don't think that happens with Oscar Pereira. Granted, everyone else's pick has a pretty good resume. I think a pretty good reason to win it. But I think Pereira has done a lot with not as much talent as other coaches have. And excited to see what he does in the playoffs. But I gave Oscar Pereira my Coach of the Year, even though the Atlanta United fan in me hated typing every letter of that man's name. But he's a great manager. He's made Orlando City one of the best teams in the league, and we'll see how it goes in playoffs, and we'll see how it carries over into 2021. We'll see if Orlando City becomes a force in the league for years to come. So I went with Oscar Pareja.
I think Drew is making a really good case, and it's making me sort of rethink my choice, but I'll say this. So I picked Jim Curtin. We all picked Jim Curtin, all of us not named Drew. But for me personally, the tiebreaker between these two is the fact that Jim Curtin has worked towards this for so long. And I mean, the biggest thing that stands out to me is he changed his whole like tactics and formation base when Ernst Tanner came in. He went from playing a like pretty standard 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 possession based. He went from that to a 4-4-2 diamond that was all about the high press. And for him to adapt to that and then coach the team up to a supporter shield, I think is just outstanding. And he's just a great guy. And so I think because of that, Curtin gets the slight edge. Although what Pereira has done in Orlando is really nothing short of a miracle, because honestly, the fact that it's taken Orlando 6 years to get into the playoffs, the fact that they've been through three or four coaches now, the fact that they've missed on so many players, and yet they have such a great fan base, such great support, and they've never capitalized on it. You could tell there was a big issue with the culture there, and clearly Pareja has turned things around. He has already started to put his print on the team, and like Drew said, I really can't wait to see what he does in the playoffs and next year, because what he's doing is special. So Pareja really, you know, he did a fantastic job. I just think Curtin gets a slight edge for everything that he's done and all the struggles he's had to endure as Philadelphia's coach. He's been there for so long. We talked about it last week. He probably would have been fired if it was any other club. So for him to make it this far and, you know, just coach Philadelphia up to the supporter shield is so impressive to me.
Yeah, Dan, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I just think it's great that he finally got a title with Philadelphia, especially for being the coach there for so long. And he's done it with homegrown players too, which is really great to see. They got Aronson going to Europe now, and then maybe McKenzie, and then Fontana had a really good season too, who's a homegrown player. So just great to see that club finally kind of take off now and get their first big title in MLS.
Fully agree. I honestly completely forgot that Orlando won MLS's back. So we'll see whether or not that actually plays into it. But
runner-up in MLS's back.
Oh, he was runner-up, right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm tired.
It's okay. That feels like years ago at this point.
Literally, it's been the longest 3 months, 4 months, if that. All right, let's move on to the playoffs because we're 54 minutes into the podcast and we have like 10 games to talk about. But we'll start off with the games this coming weekend. In specifics, the play-in games, I guess, is what they're going to call them. First of all being New England Revolution versus the Montreal Impact. So what are your predictions for this match? Who do you think will move on to the technically playoffs, I guess?
They're moving on to the next round, technically, from where they are.
Yeah, it's a tough one because technically they're not in the playoffs yet, in my opinion. But I don't know. That's a discussion for another day. What are your guys' predictions for this game? Who do you think wins? Is it a Revolution runaway? Does Montreal grind it out? Does Thierry Henry finally get a playoff win, kind of, technically? I don't know what they're calling this, but what are your predictions? Let's start with Change It Up, Dan.
Yeah, I think New England will take this game. I was just looking through. It looks like most of their games have been close, though, when they played each other this season. They've all been one goal differences. So, but I just think that Montreal has been too inconsistent this season, and I think the Revolution will take this one just because of the better team, I think.
All right. Josh, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with Dan. You look at the results between these two teams this year, and even though it's been close, it's clear that New England just have enough talent. You look at players like Carlos Hill and Gustavo Bow, and even kind of Adam Buxa. He hasn't really lived up to the DP tag yet, I don't think. And obviously you've got the difference maker in Matt Turner and goal. So when you've got those, you know, those designated players that can come through in the big moments, and you've got Matt Turner standing on his head in goal, you know, you got to give the edge to New England, I think. I do think it's interesting, though, with both of these head coaches. You know, Henri's going for his first ever playoff win as a head coach, and then Arena's going for his first playoff win with New England because they lost their opening round game against Atlanta last year. So it'll be interesting to see which one of these guys gets that win first.
Yeah, I went with the same boat. I picked New England just because Montreal's been limping into the playoffs. Not a been good run of form as of late. And then Bo, Heal, and Buxa all trying to get back and form together after injuries kind of put off those three playing together. Yeah, I think Dan said it best. I think New England's just the better team, and I think they'll get the win in this one.
I concur. All right, let's talk about the next match. Nashville.
So naturally, Montreal's going to win like 5-0 now.
That would be amazing, honestly. Just amazing.
Montreal wins MLS Cup.
No, please. Please, no. Let's move on to the next match. Nashville versus Miami. The two expansion sides, one of which will be guaranteed a spot into the first round of the playoffs. Who do you have winning this match? Do you have the DP stacked Miami, or do you have the defensively solid Nashville? Let's start with Josh this time.
Man, this is a tough call. You look at Nashville and you see a team, right? They're players playing together as a team. They've bought into what Gary Smith is coaching them to do. They don't have the glamour that Miami has, but obviously they've gotten it done. They've gotten the results. They've earned this home game. And then you look at Miami, and they've got all these designated players. And when it comes down to these single elimination games and these playoff games, you need those big players to come through in big moments. That being said, I personally am going to go with Nashville. I think defensively, they're just too tough to break down. They're going to get the one or two goals that they need to beat Miami. And going back to those big players that Miami has, none of them have really delivered. Probably just Pizarro. I don't think Matuidi has really delivered. Higuain certainly has not delivered. He's got worse numbers than Chicharito. So I'm going to have to go with Nashville on this one. And preemptively, going to have to congratulate Nashville on being the first expansion team to win a playoff game in 22 years.
All right. And next up, we will go with Drew.
I am on the same side as Josh. I think Nashville's defense is going to get them through this game. Like Josh mentioned, when you talk about the big players Miami has, in these one-off games, if the big name players show up, it's wonderful and it can push you off in a run. If they don't show up, I really don't know what Miami's going to do. But Nashville is consistently good on defense. Yeah, it's not relying on one player to get the job done. And if that one player doesn't show up, then the whole thing crashes and burns. I'm very excited to see Nashville's performance in these playoffs. So I'm going Nashville in this one. Dan, who are you picking between Nashville and Miami in this little play-in game?
I'm going to go with Miami. I think I just think offensively, if they can gel and get some goals, I think they can overpower Nashville. I also want to see a Philadelphia and Miami rematch after what happened with Higuain in the last time they played each other.
That would be spicy.
I think that'd be a great playoff matchup. So that's where I'm picking Inter Miami. It's just solely for that reason. but yeah, that's who I got.
Valid reason.
I'm gonna back Dan just for the story because I think that would be amazing. And it's a big game. Walker Zimmerman can only do so much. So how much of an influence are Julian Carranza, Rodolfo Pizarro, Federico Higuain, and the other Higuain, whose name I'm blanking
Gonzalo.
On. Gonzalo, there we go. Thank you. Gonzalo Higuain are going to have on that match. I think Miami's got a shot. This is going to be a very, very good game to watch, and I'm really looking forward to it. But let's move on to some actual playoff games as opposed to the play-in things, I guess. They're starting the games at 12 o'clock. That is an interesting decision by MLS. But Orlando versus NYCFC, starting off 12 o'clock on Saturday. Who do you expect to take this match and move on to the second round? Do you expect the no name, I guess, no big name apart from Nani, Orlando SC? Or do you expect the aging stars, is it fair to call them that, in Maxi Morales and missing a DP in Hebert, and arguably, in my opinion, one of the best defensive midfielders in MLS, and Alexander Ring. But we'll start with Drew this time. Who do you expect to win between Orlando and NYCFC?
Yeah, just when you were talking about, random side note, 12 o'clock on a Saturday, I don't know how much these people are going to be watching. That's like college football time. I don't know if Central Florida has a football game Saturday afternoon, but that's an interesting decision that you bring up there, Connor. But yeah, I'm going with NYCFC. I think when you look at the recent run of form between these two teams, Orlando City coming off that heartbreaker against Nashville, and NYCFC has won 4 straight games. And not only have they won 4 straight games, obviously that kind of weird match against Chicago, but they've scored a lot of goals in most of those games. The only game they did not score multiple goals, Connor probably remembers, because NYCFC beat Toronto 1-0. But they scored 3 against Montreal, 5 against the Red Bulls, and then 4 against Chicago. So I think they're rolling right now, and they're playing a pretty depleted Orlando City team who got beat by Nashville at the buzzer there. So because of that, I think NYCFC has been on a really good run of form lately, and I think that's going to carry over into the playoffs. So I am picking NYCFC to win that one. Josh, who do you have going through in that game?
You know, I think you bring up some extremely valuable points. Valid points, I guess, in saying that NYCFC they're on a roll. They got the momentum. But I'm going Orlando in this one. I look back at what Pareja did with this team in the MLS's back tournament. I think that's the most comparable situation that we have. And it's looking like Orlando will have at least some of their bigger players ready. It looks like, I think it's Mueller and Nani and Pereira are going to be able to play. So I am expecting Orlando to come through solely because they sort of have they have the will to overcome NYCFC, I think. But I do think it's going to be a good game, and I think it's going to be a fun game to watch. Dan, who do you have winning in this matchup?
I'm going with Orlando, just based off what we saw in the MLS's back tournament. I think they're going to be a really good playoff team. And NYCFC, I mean, they've been really good offensively lately, but I just think Orlando is going to come out with the right mindset to win this one.
Yeah, I concur with both Josh and Dan. I don't think NYCFC have the firepower in order to score goals. Yeah.
Ironic that Drew was the only one of us to pick Pareja as coach of the year, and here he is, the only one not picking Orlando to go through.
It's MLS, man. Parity. That's all we got going.
That's a good. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
I just don't think NYCFC have the firepower to score enough against Orlando. Their only striker is what, Castellanos, and Maxi Morales, who is injured all the time.
Wait, you mean player of the month?
Five against Red Bulls.
You mean player of the month, Tati Castellanos? That one?
Yes, that one. I'm not going to hear it from you, bud.
I'm never going to let you live that down.
I am never going to let you live down the fact that Diego Rossi is a very good player. But I'm just going with Orlando. I think that they'll take it. But I could honestly see this game going either way. Let's move on to the next game on Saturday, which is the only other game on Saturday, because MLS schedule makers decided to play games at 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock as opposed to at night when people will actually watch. But Columbus versus New York Red Bull at 3 o'clock. Who do you guys have taking this one? Josh, we'll start with you.
I am going to go with Columbus Crew. I think that's who I picked in my bracket. Let me make sure. Yeah, I picked Columbus Crew in this one. Red Bulls are in the playoffs again, and that's great and everything, but Columbus just have the talent. The only question, I think, is will Columbus's best players be fully healthy and fully able to imprint the game? So I think that Columbus will come out on top. I think it'll be kind of close, and that's just what I'm expecting. I'm expecting talent to win out in this case. I'll go Dan. Who do you think is going to win in this game?
I think I'm going to go with the New York Red Bulls. I think they're going to pull off the upset in this one. They've been scoring goals like really late in games lately, which I think could happen in this one. I think it'll be a close one. There was like three straight games where they scored goals like I think after like the 85th minute or something. So I think if they're able to hold Columbus, they could pull something off in the second half with a late goal. They're just a really scrappy team right now that doesn't seem to give up. And I think that's something that will benefit them. And it looks like Ohio State's playing at 12, so props to MLS for scheduling this at 3 o'clock, because like, no one would watch this game probably if they switched it. Yeah.
And get those Columbus fans.
Yeah.
Okay, my logic, though, why aren't you playing at night?
The bigger college football games?
The big college football games happen at night.
We're really going to give in to college football?
Buddy.
This is the United States. Yes, we are.
That is true.
Football versus soccer, right. Or football versus football, whatever you want to.
That is true. All right, Drew, who did you pick?
Yeah, I went the same route as Dan. I went with the New York Red Bulls. I think this is going to be a close game. This is a hard one to pick. It was kind of just a flip a coin game. But Columbus, I mean, the only reason I think that they beat Philadelphia was because they played their goalkeeper. And I think you look at the past result, I'm not taking anything away from beating Atlanta United because it's Atlanta United. They lost to Orlando City, even though Orlando City was down to 10 men as of late. So this game, it's going to be one of the closer ones. This was I went back and forth on making this pick, but I went with the Red Bulls on this one.
I disagree with both you and Dan. I think it will be Columbus. I think they're the better team, and I think they just possess more talent. As simple as that. So let's move on to the next game. Our first game of the Western Conference, Sunday at 4 o'clock Eastern. By the way, all these times are in Eastern for you Pacific listeners or Mountain listeners or wherever else you're listening to this. I think we've had listeners like out in Europe or something. But SKC versus San Jose. I'd argue potentially one of the toughest games to pick, because I think San Jose is a massive wild card. But I want to hear all of your logic in terms of who you selected. We will start with not Josh, because I know he's going to go on some sort of rant. Instead, we will go with Dan, because I don't think we've started with you in a while.
I'm going to go with Sporting Kansas City. I mean, it'd be great if San Jose won. I mean, that'd be incredible. I mean, these guys were losing like, you know, 5-0 on a weekly basis, it seemed, there for a while. So I think it'd just be an incredible story. Like, that's just wild to me that they're even in the playoffs, period. But I think Sporting Kansas City is just a better team. I think now that Pulido's back, that's really helped them. Gadi Quinta's been really good as well. So I just think they have the quality to overpower San Jose in this one. But it's been a nice run from San Jose. So too bad they didn't get maybe a higher seed and able to keep it going. But yeah.
All right. Drew, who is your selection?
Yeah, I'm sticking with Dan on this one. I think either San Jose pulls the greatest upset of all time and beats Sporting Kansas City 6-0, or we see an absolute beatdown and SKC beats them 7-0. And I'm leaning more towards SKC getting the beatdown. Like Dan said, it's kind of remarkable, and I think a product of, they got the 8 seed, yeah, so... Yeah, I think Sporting Kansas City is just a better team. And fun fact, I've been like concerned about scheduling now. Kansas City Chiefs play 8:20 on Sunday night, so it's gonna be a good day for Kansas City. They're gonna watch SKC get the win. They're gonna see Pat Mahomes destroy the Las Vegas Raiders that night. So Kansas City, it's gonna have a good day. So I'm picking Sporting Kansas City. Josh, who do you have winning that game?
I can't speak for the Raiders Chiefs game, which I think is gonna be a good game. I think the Raiders have been playing pretty well.
Pat Mahomes.
Oh, man. I know. He's my fantasy quarterback. He's my guy. That being said, definitely going with San Jose here for a few reasons. One, I don't know how Sporting Kansas City got this top seed. I don't know how they got here. I've been saying that for weeks. I will continue saying it. I don't understand how they did this. But yes, San Jose are like the most Jekyll and Hyde team in the league. They can go from winning a game like 4-1 to losing a game like 7-2, like literally in consecutive games. But Almeida has always had success in knockout tournaments. He did it with Chivas. He did it with, I can't remember the other Liga MX team he coached. And I think he did well in the Libertadores when he was coaching down in Argentina. He even did pretty well with San Jose in the MLS's back tournament a couple months ago, and this is largely the same team. So I'm going to go with San Jose on this one. I think they'll get the upset. I even have them advancing to the conference semis. Or no, the conference final, sorry. I have them going to the Final Four. We don't have to get into that right now, but I think they will be able to beat Sporting Kansas City. I just don't think... I don't think SKC is good enough to overcome it.
That will be our discussion next week when San Jose get absolutely demolished, like I think they will, by SKC, because we don't give them nearly enough credit and they won the West.
How?
So
how?
You see, that's the thing, is they're a quietly solid team. So I think as a quietly solid team, they're going to fit well in the playoffs, and Pulido will do well. And yeah, I'm going SKC as well, but that will be a very interesting game to watch. Next up, we have Minnesota versus Colorado, who debatedly shouldn't be facing Minnesota. You could probably argue that pretty strongly, but who do you guys have as the winner of the Minnesota-Colorado game, which is at 7:30? We will start with Drew.
Yeah, and... scheduling, it's not a whole lot of conflicts as far as NFL games go, so credit to MLS. But I'm going with the Colorado Rapids because they've won the last three games. They're not, two of those three games were against some of the best teams in the West. They smacked Seattle 3-1, and they beat Portland 1-0, and they finished the job against the Dynamo, winning 2-1. Last time these two teams played wasn't that long ago. It was late October, and Minnesota did get the win. But I think Colorado... I think just this late push that they had to go through to just to make it in the playoffs is like kind of sparked a fire under the Rapids, and they've had to do it against some really good teams. So I love Minnesota United. I want them to do so good, so bad. I love that they sing Wonderwall after wins. But Colorado's been doing really good against really good teams, and I think it's going to carry over pretty well into the playoffs. So I am saying the Colorado Rapids win this one.
All right, Josh, who are you going with?
I will say I want Colorado to win as a franchise that just struggled so much since I started following MLS in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, I want them to succeed. You know, I feel bad for them. That being said, I'm going to go with Minnesota. I just think that since they'll be playing at home, and I, I, I just trust the way Minnesota bunkers. They sit back, they find the right chance to come forward on a counterattack, and that's all they need to do. And I think they'll really be going after that first ever playoff win for the franchise. And I think that'll be enough to inspire them to advance past Colorado.
All right, and Dan, wrap us up with the Minnesota-Colorado game.
I think I'm going to go with Colorado on this one. They've been playing pretty well the last few weeks. So, yeah, I think that'll help them a lot. And it should be a really close game. I think this one probably will go to extra time, I'm thinking, just because I could see both teams scoring goals in this one. And maybe it'll be a 2-1 finish or something. But, yeah, I just think Colorado has some good momentum heading into this game.
I am back in Colorado as well because, as you know, I like a lot of the players on Colorado, including Nicolas Benazet, who I'm a big fan of. And I think that the added rest in between October, when they all caught COVID, will potentially help, but who knows, because COVID is so unpredictable, and wear a mask, everybody. Our next game is at 10 o'clock on Sunday. It is between Portland and Dallas. I feel like I know who everyone's going to pick for this game, but I'll start with Dan because you are the most wild card, in my opinion, of who you'll select. So who are you going with in the Portland-Dallas game?
I'm going to go with Portland. I don't know, though. I mean, I think this one could be another potential upset. But I just think that they're, even without Nils Gjota and Sebastian Blanco, I think they can make a good playoff run and they'll be at home. So, yeah, I just don't think FC Dallas has enough to match them in this one. And I think Portland's experience in the playoffs and the MLS's back tournament, winning that will give them a lot of confidence that they can do well in the playoffs.
All right. Drew, you are second in terms of the wildcard picks on this one. So who are you going with?
Everything Dan just said makes a lot of sense, and there should be no reason FC Dallas wins this game, but just because it's MLS and because I want to have the perfect bracket and I want to be different, I picked FC Dallas. And because, as we'll talk about in a later thing, I don't see a Cascadia matchup happening in the playoffs. I don't think it's going to happen. So there's no reason why FC Dallas should win this game. I think Portland's a better team. It is interesting, though, without Nils Gjota, Blanco. I don't know what the status on Obobese is because he hasn't been healthy toward the end of the season. So a lot of injuries up in the air for Portland. But I really have nothing to back this pick. I just think it's MLS. It's crazy. And I'm kind of going like a March Madness type mindset here. Like if a 16 can beat a 1 in basketball, like why can't a 6 beat a 3 in MLS? So FC Dallas, that's who I'm picking.
All right, I told you you were going to be out there. Next up, finally, Josh.
I do think Dallas could push Portland, just like they pushed last year's MLS Cup champions, Seattle, in the first round. On the road, they did that in Seattle, and obviously they'll be going on the road here in Portland. I think Dallas could push them, but, I mean, no. Portland just has enough talent, and you know, like Dan said, Dallas just doesn't have the firepower. And you look, and their best players are young players, but those young players also don't have experience in these high-pressure single-elimination games, these high-pressure situations, and that's why I think Portland's going to have the edge on this. Also, they have Dairon Asprilla. That guy is Mr. November. Like, he's going to come through. He always does. So you just can't – I just don't think he can go against Portland in this situation.
I agree, and you say, oh, but FC Dallas pushed Seattle last year. Yes, they also had Reggie Cannon.
That's true.
And they no longer have Reggie Cannon.
And Paxton Pomacole is in that game, and he's not available now either.
Exactly. So I don't think this will be very close, and I think Portland will take it. But we'll move on to, do we want to do these games? I think we'll have Dan do these games, and we'll talk about these games next week, and these games specifically being the play-in team versus Toronto or Philadelphia. So, Dan, I'll just get your opinions on these two. Josh and Drew, we'll talk about this next week, so you'll have to tune in next week to get our thoughts on whether or not Toronto and Philadelphia will win, so I can go on a rant about how Toronto will be healthy. But, Dan, Who do you have in the Toronto versus Nashville, New England, or Montreal game on Tuesday night at 6 o'clock?
Yeah, I think Toronto will win this one pretty handily. I don't really see how any of those teams could beat Toronto on the road. And plus, I mean, it's a pretty quick turnaround there from Friday night to Tuesday. So, I mean, I'm sure they're going to be tired after that, especially since they haven't played this past week either. I don't know if that's going to affect them at all. But, yeah, I just can't see Toronto losing that one. And then I can't see Philadelphia losing to, hopefully it's Miami, but if not, someone else. They're not going to lose. They're 9-0 at home, so they haven't even lost or even drawn a match this season at home. So I think is going to be a really big storyline in the playoffs for them, is if they can keep winning at home. I didn't think home field advantage was even going to like matter in 2020 because there's really no one there, but apparently it does. So good for them. But and then the last one, as much as I want to pick LAFC, I don't think they're going to beat Seattle. I just think Seattle is a really good playoff team. They obviously won last season, and for them to exit in the first round would be devastating. So I don't think they're going to let that happen.
I do find it interesting that you say Toronto FC have a home game, because I'd argue that they don't have any home games, and they haven't had a home game since...
I completely forgot like, the borders closed for like ever, but yeah. It's
it'll be interesting to see how they do when they come back, and hopefully they'll have a lot of players return. But I'll ask you too about the Seattle LAFC game, because we actually know who the teams are, and we can wrap up with this. But who do you have? We'll start with Josh. Who do you have winning the Seattle versus LAFC game on Tuesday night at 10:30?
Before that, just want to say I didn't know about the Philadelphia stat, which means they're going to win MLS Cup, right? Because they have home field advantage in the playoffs. So they've won every single home game. That means I'm just kidding. This is MLS. There's no way that's going to happen.
You're going to lose in the first round. You know how
this works. So Seattle LAFC. I feel like more than ever LAFC is equipped for this kind of game. You know, last year it was really easy to say like, oh, they might not get past the Galaxy, and then they did, and then, you know, we saw what happened against the Sounders. And then this year, though, LAFC kind of exercised those demons, and MLS is back. That being said, I just don't think LAFC can overcome the international players they'll be missing. They'll still have Atuesta and Vela and Wright Phillips and all that, all those key players, but I just think Seattle's going to have that slight edge. You know, they're going to have Raul Ruiz Diaz, which is a big deal because that dude could beat LAFC single-handedly. So when you have Ruiz Diaz and Lodeiro and Morris, I mean, those guys just know how to show up in big games. That's why Seattle has been to three of the last four MLS Cups and won two of those three. They know what they're doing. So I do give the edge to Seattle in this case, but only because LAFC are going to be missing those couple international players.
I think I'm starting to see tears form in Dan's eyes with everything you're saying.
No, I'm already mentally prepared.
Yes,
for the loss.
That is the attitude.
It's going to happen. I mean, I'll still tune in, but I'm not going to get my hopes up at all.
With the luck that LA has had this season with sports, ignoring the NHL, LAFC should win this, but this MLS Cup, but it's MLS, so we have no idea ever, and making a bracket at this point is probably pointless, but...
It's probably going to be Miami. I mean, Breck.
Exactly. But
we can throw a party for Breck Shea when he wins the title.
You know what? I would love that, actually.
If we need to get Breck Shea on this podcast at some point. I think that would be unbelievable. But Drew, I'll let you wrap us up. Who do you have winning LAFC against Seattle?
Yeah, I think... Yeah, everyone said it best, Seattle. I just can't see them going out in the first round until they do. I think Seattle's just more experienced. They know how to do this. And I think it'll work again against LAFC. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be a good one. I'm excited to stay up late on a Tuesday night to watch some MLS because that's just how it's working right now. But yeah, thanks, Dan, so much for joining us on the podcast to talk all things MLS. We really enjoyed having you. And as always, guys, please visit MLSMultiplex.com. To check out a lot of really awesome, good written articles from our writers as playoffs get started and eventually get to MLS Cup to see who is the champion and Connor.
I just wanted to say before we wrap up, everyone should join the MLS Multiplex Bracket League, which we've started. Dan will be joining hopefully momentarily. But we have Josh, Drew, and Ivan, who was supposed to be on this episode, but unfortunately some stuff got in the way of that. We have Cameron. We have former site head Nathan Reynolds. We have Hilaria Muniz, who's appeared on the podcast in the predictions episode. Who else do we have on here? We'll see if anyone else has joined in the time of us recording. We have, oh wow, we've actually gotten a lot of people. Or we have gotten one. Two people who I don't actually know. So that's always a good thing. But get involved. Join the league, please. Yeah, I don't really know what else to add. Just Daniel, thank you for joining us. It's weird knowing a Michigan guy from Michigan who is a fan of the LAFC, but Drew, I'll let you actually take us out this time.
Yeah, thanks again to Dan for coming on, joining, and yeah, join the bracket. See if you get the magical perfect bracket, and you can find Connor tweeted out, and you can find Connor's Twitter at CWG Somerville. You can find myself at underscore Drew Hubbard, Josh at Josh underscore Bowl, and you can find Dan at DGarza42, and the website at MLS Multiplex. So be sure to visit us on social media to catch takes throughout MLS Cup playoffs. And yeah, thanks again for tuning in, and we will see you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to the MLS Multiplex podcast. Check out all of the contributors' written work at MLSMultiplex.com.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.